liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
I need somebody, help. Not just anybody, help. You know I need someone, help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and opened up the doors.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I have the treat of featuring a candidate for the Republican nomination for the governor of Wisconsin as my guest today. His name, Adam Fischer, because I'm discussing a number of national issues before I would normally bring him in. At the bottom of the first hour, I'm going to invite his comments on the stories as we go along. I begin with Biden's speech the other day. It was incredibly boring, but it must have had big pharma CEOs jumping for joy. It was like the prolonged commercial. This president is simply a one-trick pony. His entire plan on how to deal with Xi's, the president of China's Omicron variant, is more of the same. Vaccines, boosters, mass tests. Don't try drinking game when you take a drink every time Biden says vaccine, vaccination, or booster, because you're going to be out by the second minute. More than half of the brief revolved around vaccines, which is ironic, since it seems the administration simply wants Americans to submit themselves to a never-ending cycle of vaccination and boosting, despite the waning efficacy and increased number of breakthrough infections. By the way, all the Biden administration has going forward at this point in time is the virus in the agenda in January 6th. And January 6th is falling apart as having been a monstrous scam where the FBI may have been more populist than any bona fide protesters. Biden began by saying, if you're vaxxed and boosted, you have no fear of the Omicron. But if you're unvaxxed, you're going to get sick and everyone around you is going to get sick. But that's just absurd. Those who are vaccinated are getting sick again and dying, and they're suffering massive damage. Remember, I've observed, we have a database from the World Health Organization of more than 2 million cases that involve, you know, serious damage across 16 or more different physical ailments and problems. It's incredible, blood clots being an outstanding example. And where it's very clear the pandemic is not of the unvaccinated, but of the vaccinated. Here you have what could be called Biden's Christmas card. For the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death for yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm. Merry Christmas, the White House. That isn't a real Christmas message from the White House, but it's certainly consistent with what he's telling us. Watch while he coughs into his hand that talks about how the unvaccinated are at risk from a variant that has symptoms similar to the common cold. Indeed, it's very clear we're never going to be rid of a coronavirus because we've had it forever. Coronavirus is a virus causing a common cold. It's been with us forever. It will be with us forevermore. Vaccinations, no vaccinations, which are doing more damage than help. Weirdly, after talking about how the unvaxxed are more likely to die, which appears to be false, he sought to dial down the panic. But after the constant COVID fear porn that's been pushed by the corporate media, the Democrats, but I repeat myself, in this administration, it's going to be a tough sell. His target audience appears to be Pfizer time 3, negative rapid test, natural immunity, N95 sealed face with surgical mask, secondary mask, face shield, vinyl gloves, touchscreen gloves, I mean, I'm telling you, mine said everyone should be concerned but not panicked about the Omicron variant, and all the evidence shows it's milder, much milder than the previous variant. We have that from multiple sources. So the plan from the White House is to get everyone vaccinated, then everyone get a booster. But isn't that the same plan he's had all along? No, actually, he's federalizing the response. Yes, FEMA rapid responders are going to start to be deployed in order to inject people with the mRNA shots. Yay for big government, crowd the libtards, embarrassingly bad. Emily Miller tweets, there'll be positive cases in every office, even here in the White House, among the vaccinated from Omicron, President Biden. So how can we help? How will it help if Omicron is already spreading that we're going to have an additional half a billion tests? Only a couple of interesting moments where, in a surprising twist, he actually gave credit to Trump for developing the COVID vaccines. But that's certainly a dubious achievement, all things considered. Answering a question about nixing the Build Back Better plan, he went off on a rant with a very strange moment where he got angry about fictional parents on minimum wage unable to buy insulin for their children. He gets visibly angry when he talks about parents not being able to afford life-saving medication like insulin. Imagine being a parent looking at a child and you can't afford, you have no house to borrow against, you have no savings, it's wrong. Good grief, it was awful. Awful indeed. Too bad he didn't mention monoclonal antibodies, didn't mention ivermectin, didn't mention hydroxychloroquine. Very bad, which I regard as a key indication of the maliciousness of the whole campaign. They're suppressing bona fide available treatments that have been around for decades, some up to 65 years, that actually will suppress or destroy the threat, because you cannot have emergency use authorization for these mRNA vaccines if there are readily available alternative treatments. So they're moving forward, and because they're only emergency available, they don't have to list the ingredients, which we know now are appalling, include all kinds of weird stuff, graphene oxide, little parasites, all kinds of stuff that is very, very bad. I don't want to put Adam Fisher on the spot here, but I think he may have a few contributions to make, his thoughts about these issues, because after all, in any campaign, whether for the nomination or a general election, the pandemic and the vaccines are going to be a major issue. Adam, welcome to the Raw Deal.
Jim, thanks for having me. My comments on these issues are, I am not going to let anybody take away our American freedoms. I myself have chose not to be vaccinated. I do not wear a mask. I know that the coronavirus is real. I had it myself in July for 20 days. It was horrible. But I believe that there's no expert out there right now that can tell us how to treat the coronavirus. I don't believe that, in my own belief, that the vaccines work, but I'm not a medical doctor. Again, I believe in medical freedoms. I believe in medical choices. Talk with your doctors. Do your own research. If you want to take the vaccine that we know nothing about, that is causing problems with people with blood clots, enlarged hearts, and up to death, then take your risk. Take the shot if you want. But the mandates are going to go away, at least in Wisconsin, on day one, as I become your next governor.
Adam, I'm just delighted to hear all that. You've already got my vote, I'll tell you. No masks, no mandates, I'm all for that. And of course, every medical expert knows that there's something terribly wrong here with the sudden spike in damaged individuals suffering adverse effects once they introduce the mRNA virus. For example, I mentioned the 2 million adverse effects by the World Health Organization. Well, the year before it was only 2,000. So once they introduced the COVID vaccine, it increased 1,000-fold. Think about that. Everybody knows. And before that, there were only 87, and before that, 2 or 3. What we're saying is the number of adverse effects now since they've introduced this coronavirus is overwhelmingly greater than from all vaccines in the past combined. Meanwhile, Manchin derangement syndrome has taken hold of the Democratic Party. Manchin may be the most hated person, where both the White House and Democrats are enraged when Manchin went on Fox on Sunday and stated he couldn't vote for the Build Back Better Act for very good reasons. He takes issue with the level of spending, coupled with a series of other problems it would exacerbate. The White House, however, is having a meltdown. They're accusing Manchin of going back on his word, failing to make good on alleged promise. As the party continues to rage against him, their Manchin derangement syndrome is becoming more than apparent. Since Sunday, when Manchin declared he'd not be voting for Build Back Better, members of his party have made a series of increasingly outlandish and obscene claims. They've called him a traitor, stating his reasons for not backing are rooted in nonsense. One of the most ridiculous may be that he somehow betrayed his constituents in West Virginia by opposing Build Back Better. What Democrats don't realize, though, is West Virginia is a very red state. He's repeatedly maintained his views and votes are in keeping with his constituents' best interests and policies. The West Virginia lawmaker has held he cannot vote for his bill that his constituents aren't supporting. Manchin derangement syndrome has blinded the Democratic Party, made them incapable of recognizing not everyone's a hard leftist who wants to completely burn down the country and remake it into a communist dystopia. Not only will Manchin not vote for the Build Back Better, he's also made clear he'll not support doing away with a filibuster. Polls have shown that Manchin's constituents want the filibuster to remain as well. Until Republicans can win back more congressional seats, Manchin is the one holding the line against the absolute tyranny and destruction the hard left has seek to bring to America. And when you consider how evenly divided is the Senate, there's a potential here, recognized by Mitch McConnell, inviting Joe Manchin to join the GOP. Talk about a revolution in Washington. This would make a huge difference. McConnell said he was astonished by the angry reaction of his Democrat colleagues to Manchin after his announcement that he couldn't support the domestic spending plan. Obviously, we would love to have him on our team. I think he'd be more comfortable. Why in the world would they want to call him a liar and try to hotbox him and embarrass him? I think the message is, we don't want you around. It's up to Joe Manchin, but he's clearly not welcome on that side of the aisle. Manchin has fueled rumors he could leave the Democrat Party next year after his bombshell decision to oppose Biden's signature economic issue. McConnell said he'd try to persuade Manchin in 2019 to join the party many times, but failed to do so. There is a change in the strategy now, where Manchin is the head of a very powerful committee in the House on energy, where McConnell has offered to continue him in that role in charge, were the Republicans to take control of the Senate, which, in my opinion, would be a sensational development. Adam, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that we need to stop this current government and making us into a communist and socialist country. And those of you that are out there that don't see it, you need to wake up. Look at Australia and look at China. Look at the lockdowns that they're forcing upon us with fear. We need to turn back to God. God says several thousand times in the Bible, we shall not fear, as he loves us more than he loves the sparrows, and he will take care of us. Just turn to him in the day of trouble. But again, I want to say, wake up to all the people out there. Look around. They're taking history out of our schools, and they're teaching hate and pornographic stuff to our eighth graders. They don't want us to remember the Holocaust and the terrible tyranny that government has done to the people of their own countries. Wake up, people.
Well, those are very, very interesting observations, Adam. We'll return to those. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis in Florida, call him DeSantis Claus. Florida ports report record volume as the governor vows to save Christmas. They have a record volume in 2021 as supply chain shortages flourish under Biden, which appears to be a deliberate policy, as I've reported in the past. A deputy secretary of the Treasury has declared that the supply problems won't be solved until every American is vaxxed, which implies that it's a deliberate policy of the Biden administration to extort and pressure Americans into getting the vax. DeSantis, however, is vowing to do everything he can to save Christmas. The Jacksonville Port Authority is handling an all-time record volume, processing more than 1.4 million 20-foot equivalent units during the year, a 10% increase from 2020. Port Manatee has announced similar success, where it too has broken a record for imports with increased production. The Jacksonville port could handle up to a 50% increase if ships off the California coast decide to head east. And actually, given the way they're stacked up off of Long Beach and Los Angeles, that might be a very wise thing to do. The success of the port handling record volume comes as Governor DeSantis has taken a very different approach to save Christmas than the Biden administration. Supply chain issues have become so prevalent that the White House has warned in relation to Christmas shopping, there will be things that people can't get. DeSantis blasted the White House for the coming crisis heading into the holidays. As the rest of the nation faces rampant inflation and businesses stare down unprecedented supply chain problems, our message is, Florida is here. We're going to make sure Americans get their Christmas gifts this season. The Washington Post, which we all know is a propaganda organ, has become so much worse since Jeff Bezos bought it up to be his own propaganda toy and plaything, ran cover and demanded Americans, rather than complain about the supply crisis, lower their expectations. How disgusting is that? The Washington Post opinion. Don't rant about short-staffed stores and supply chain woes. Try to lower expectations. We do ourselves a favor by consciously lowering expectation, a recent Washington Post op-ed advised, telling the public not to worry because eventually the supply chain will get straightened out. Well, if you listen to the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, that will only happen after every American is vaxxed, and I guarantee you that will never happen. Therefore, if the supply chain problem is only going to be solved under those circumstances, the supply chain problem will never be solved. DeSantis, however, has no intent to simply let the Biden administration simply figure things out. Today's news conference focused on promoting Florida ports to transport cargo and alleviate the supply chain issues we've seen nationwide. Jaxport CEO Eric Green said Jaxport reached a record amount of containers transported this year at 1.4 million, and there's room for more. When you start talking about supply chain inflation, that's not something that's going to impact a small segment of the American population. That hits very wide and very hard. Florida is here. We've got the capacity, we have incentive packages to make it worth your while to bring your business through our port. One Twitter user shared a video showing cargo ships and ports in Florida in action, live footage of DeSantis saving Christmas by rerouting cargo ships to Florida. There's no indication that was a ship previously stuck in Florida, but it does show a moving cargo ship as opposed to the scene in California, where we're looking at a Twitter map where you see a vast number of vessels simply at anchor off of Long Beach and Los Angeles, where in Florida, the ships that are around are moving into port to be unloaded. The White House announced its intent to alleviate the crisis by round-the-clock operation, but that's already standard practice in Florida, while other U.S. ports are just now announcing round-the-clock operations in Florida. Many of our ports are used to serving Florida farmers, families, and businesses with 24-hour-a-day operations. As the rest of the nation faces rampant inflation and businesses stare down unprecedented supply chain problems, our message is come to Florida. Operating 24/7 is stark contrast to Biden Transportation Secretary Buttigieg, who, as the crisis was heating up, was found to have been on paternity leave for roughly 2 months. How bad is that? Let's have Adam's thoughts about these issues too. Adam.
So I love DeSantis. Him and I are a lot alike. So if you like the way that he governs Florida, you love the way that I'm going to govern Wisconsin. We both stand up for the people. We're not afraid to say what's on our mind. We're not afraid to hold the line. Once I'm governor, people will go back to work. I'm not about handouts. I'm about you reap what you sow. I believe Dan DeSantis is the same way, and that's why he's successful in Florida. He treats people the way that they should be treated, which is go to work, pay your bills, have a little leftover, and do something fun with your family.
I got to tell you, Adam, I've been so disappointed with Tony Evers. I actually attended a political meeting with our mutual friend, Rolf Lindgren, who's been a guest on this show numerous times. We sat beside one another. Everything about him was unimpressive. He seems to me to have a weak mind. He seems to have a weak spine. He seems to have been a weak governor. We need someone strong, Adam. I like what you have to say. Your platform makes a lot of sense. Catch this. Here is a Biden real Christmas. You got Santa Claus with his sleigh, but none of the reindeer are there. And the elf is reporting to him. Dasher, Dancer, and Prancer found better paying jobs. Vixen and Comet retired. Cupid wants to work from home. Donner and Blitzen don't want to work just to cover daycare. And Rudolph refused to get vaccinated and was fired. I think that sums it up pretty well. Adam, what do you think?
I would agree with you fully. And I want to further comment on, I think it's ridiculous that companies are mandating employees to get vaccines or they're fired or terminated. When's the last time that a company had the right to dictate to you what your medical, what you should do medically? I mean, does every company have a medical staff of experts to tell you what you need to do? I didn't know that they were my personal doctors. They do not have the right to tell you that you need to get a vaccine or be fired.
Adam, I think that's so terribly important. OSHA does not have the constitutional authority for this. The Fifth and the Sixth Court at different times have both spoken out in opposition. Now, of course, it's going to the Supreme Court. We're going to find out whether the Supreme Court has any balls or integrity whatsoever. I was shocked, Adam, when the Supreme Court declined to take the Texas lawsuit about the election representing Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. The theft of this last election was on such a humongous scale, but the beauty of the Texas suit was it delineated how the states, in choosing their electors, had violated their own protocols, their own state laws. It was a case where the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction because it's an issue between the states, and yet it was turned down on the ground, which I think is completely wrong, ridiculous, and offensive, by the Chief Justice, that Texas did not have standing to bring the case. Your thoughts?
I think that our world is backwards right now, and it's unfortunate. We need good law-abiding people that are constitutionalists to stand up for our rights as American citizens. Our forefathers wrote the Constitution. They had good insight, and they always went to our Father, God, and asked for discernment when writing things. I think we need to turn back to that, and we need to start being more law-abiding. I mean, let's talk about real briefly here in Wisconsin what happened down in Kenosha with Kyle Rittenhouse. Okay, here's a guy that anybody could have looked at that and said, hey, this is self-defense. Why was he arrested? But I want to further go on with something that I've been talking about, whether anybody out there has heard it yet, But I'm questioning the fact about the terrorists outside of the courthouse that were chanting, we're going to kill the jurors, we're going to kill the judges, and we're going to burn down the city. Those are all felonies, and those are all acts of terrorism. Why are these people not arrested?
Yeah. Oh, Adam, listen, I followed Kyle Rittenhouse. I've done many reports about the Rittenhouse case. Judge Andrew Broca, who maybe is our nation's leading expert on self-defense, went through every charge in detail. There were originally six, the last of which was for illegal possession of a weapon, which would only have applied if the barrel were less than 18 inches, which was not the case here. So the prosecutor was adding on a case he knew had no merit whatsoever. He withheld evidence, a better high-definition version of the drone footage that would have clearly shown that Kyle was not guilty, that he'd acted in self-defense, and where he also suborned perjury by bringing in the owners of the car lot, who were Indians who built the car lot up from the very first car to own three, one of which was destroyed the day before, and had had contact with Kyle, inviting him to help defend the lot. And they testified they didn't know him and hadn't had any contact, suborning perjury. In my opinion, that prosecutor needs to be not only reprimanded by the Wisconsin bar, but have his license to practice law revoked. This was outrageous conduct. Your thoughts?
I absolutely agree with you, Jim. And I think if we have DAs and sheriffs that don't want to do their jobs, then we're going to have to get the right people in the right positions, because Fisher as governor will not tolerate injustice. We will stand for the Wisconsinites, and we will stand with true Americans, and we will not fold to the tyranny that we've seen as of today.
Well, I believe we're about to hit a hard break, though Mitchell, my producer, is not here, so we're on a kind of automated with server for Revolution Radio. We'll see if that does not happen. But if we have the break that's coming now, we'll return with Adam Fisher, candidate for the Republican nomination for governor in the state of Wisconsin. We'll be right back. Gonna get something to drink.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? and that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Oh, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm delighted to be joined today by Adam Fischer, who is a candidate for the Republican nomination for governor of Wisconsin. Everything he said to me suggests a fresh breeze would blow across his state if he were here. He's opposed to mandates. He's for freedom of choice, whether you're vaccinated, not vaccinated. He's pro-gun rights. Very important issues. Let me mention, indeed, mandatory vaccinations are being considered in the European Union as we speak. In America, we love to complain for very good reason about Biden's mandates. Practically speaking, they're needless, only serve to antagonize the public. President Brandon doesn't like. Philosophically, they're inconsistent with the political principles that underlie the American Republic, and almost certainly are unconstitutional. Even New York City's nonsense, however, doesn't match what unvaccinated people living in Europe are going through now. The policies are already ridiculous. Multiple countries have employed lockdowns specifically for unvaccinated people, while others have implemented vaccine passports far stricter than anything New York City can muster. Austria, however, has gone further than anyone else. They've decided to introduce a 100% vaccine mandate starting in February, a policy the EU is now considering. I think it is understandable and appropriate to lead this discussion now, how we can encourage and potentially think about mandatory vaccination within the European Union, said the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen during a news conference earlier this month. This needs discussion. This needs a common approach. It's a discussion that I think has to be led. The EU does not have the statutory authority to issue a continent-wide vaccine mandate. However, it does have a great deal of political capital, and the Union can use diplomatic pressure to get member states to do what it wants. But citizens are not acceding to these mandates. Massive protests and riots have emerged in several countries. Here we have images and video from Belgium where they're protesting. Here we have others police firing live rounds against protesters in the Netherlands. Here's another. I've watched tensions in Europe as people protest COVID vaccine mandate and restriction. Police clash with them using tear gas, water cannons, and batons. But you can't see DW, BBC, CNN, Guardian News, Sky News, or Al Jazeera reporting or posting this anywhere. That's very bad. They need to be doing so. Meanwhile, tens of thousands are gathered in Austria to protest the mandatory vaccines and home confinement for those not yet jabbed. I don't condone rioting or political violence, writes the author. I'd be a hypocrite to do so after the George Floyd riots and the Capitol incursion. But European government should back off from its scientism and consider how citizens actually feel. No one outside an ivory tower asked for these mandates. No one outside an ivory tower wants them. Mandatory vaccination is cruel and wrong, treating citizens who have rights as though they were family pets. I hope the EU reconsiders, but I doubt it. Stubbornness and pride will carry the day. Adam, your thoughts about what's going on in the EU and the European and down under as well, because the protests in Australia have been humongous.
I think it's very unfortunate in other countries the way that they're treating their people from the government. But I think here in the U.S., this should be a huge wake-up call to us, because if the American people don't see it, this is knocking on our doors right now. And if we don't stand up and remind the government that they work for the people. Again, I am a servant of the people as your governor, or as I will be your governor. But we need to remind our government that we won't stand to be locked up in concentration camps. We need to remind them that this is a free country, and we will not stand by and let our country be taken over by domestic or foreign terrorists.
When you mention concentration camps, Adam, I think that's exactly what they have in mind. The CDC has talked about COVID camps. Really, it's outrageous. And of course, when you look at the January 6th insurrection alleged, we can talk more about that as we proceed. It's outrageous. The whole thing was orchestrated, where Nancy Pelosi appears to have had a crucial role. We now have Israel belatedly admitting a directing role in helping the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, who, in my opinion, was a great hero of the Middle East, not only to Iran, who helped to organize the Hezbollah defeat of Israel, which has the fourth most powerful army in the world. Quite a magnificent achievement from Zero Hedge. What was by far the boldest and most controversial foreign policy action of the Trump administration was the assassination of Iran's Quds Force commander, Qasem Soleimani, which could have easily sparked war with Iran. From the start, details of the drone strike as his entourage exited Baghdad International Airport, which also included the deputy commander of Iran-backed militias known as the Popular Mobilization Forces, has been shrouded in mystery. He was lured there, by the way, by the U.S. Secretary of State of the Trump administration to effect a peace mission. So we lured him into the target zone. We violated the sovereignty of Iraq, and we committed an international war crime here. In my opinion, this is the single most unforgivable act of Donald J. Trump, whom I have, for the most part, supported with a great deal of enthusiasm. A looming question has always been whether Israel was involved or had foreknowledge, which has now been answered, revealed that Israel's former military in chief has confirmed his country's involvement. It's the first time Israel has affirmed its role in the killing of the Iranian general. According to The Hill, Major General Tamir Heyman, who retired as the head of Army Intelligence in October, suggested in an interview with a Hebrew magazine that Israel was involved with two assassination attempts while he served the country, the first being Soleimani, who was killed in an American airstrike near the Baghdad's airport. The interview confession invites the question of why admit Israel's role now. Perhaps it's time to create further friction between Iran and Western powers negotiating for the restoration of the Iran deal in Vienna. Israel is actively lobbying for the U.S. to cut off all dialogue, arguing they're a ruse so Tehran can buy more time to advance its nuclear program. The next step is likely to be more Israeli covert sabotage operations against Iranian nuclear sites, something the Biden administration has recently warned against. His mention of a second assassination is likely a reference to Iran's top nuclear scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was killed by a remotely controlled machine gun in November. He came out into the street and everything looked normal, but there was a vehicle or a van there that had a remotely controlled machine gun that took him out. Very nasty piece of work. Speaking of Soleimani's death, General Haman described assassinating Soleimani was an achievement, since our main enemy in my eyes are the Iranians. And the top Israeli general appears to confirm. At first, as I've already recalled, it's rare to locate someone so senior who is the architect of the fighting force, the strategist and the operator. It's rare, meaning to have him in a position where he could be taken out. Haman called Soleimani the engine of the train of Iranian entrenchment in neighboring Syria. There are earlier hints at Israel's role, such as an earlier NBC report shortly after the strike, but never before direct confirmation. Adam, this really troubles me a lot. I have no doubt that in your candidacy, you'll be asked questions about U.S. foreign policy, even though governors don't normally have much to say about it. They can nevertheless make a contribution and influence. I'm interested in your views about the Iran deal, about the assassination of Soleimani, about relationship between Israel and Iran, because it seems to me, as Donald Trump recently observed, for which I give him credit, that Israel wants to fight Iran to the last American soldier. Your thoughts, Adam?
My thoughts are, I think the whole world is upside down, and I don't understand why we can't just get back to the foundation of God put us here to love one another. I know that I'm not answering your question specifically, just because as governor, I know that I just have influence on what the president's going to do, but I want the people to know where my heart and where my mind is, and that is bringing the unity amongst all people and all nations, and to say, you know what, everybody just knock it off. Isn't there enough problems in the world than to be at each other's throats and wanting war? I don't know anybody who says, you know what, I want to kill a bunch of people. But that's what these people are doing with their bickering and fighting, is just killing each other. We have enough problems. So what I say is, let this be the Christmas of peace, and let's speak love to our brothers and sisters around the world.
Well, I appreciate your taking that stance. As I've many times reported, Iran is the greatest peace-loving nation in the world, having not launched a war of aggression against any other state since 1775, where the ratification of the Constitution began in 1787. George Washington was elected our first president in 1789. So for longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic, Iran has not launched a war of aggression against any other state. They have, of course, responded to the massive onslaught from Iraq, which the United States seemed to have initiated or encouraged, where both sides seem to have lost about 1 million, which was a great tragedy. But I would observe as well that our own intel agencies concluded already in 2007 that Iran was not attempting to develop nuclear weapons, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011. Even the Mossad came on board and agreed that Iran was not seeking to produce nuclear weapons in 2012, just weeks before Bibi Netanyahu went to the United Nations and declared the opposite. So this thing is a sham. The idea of not reentering the Iran deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was designed to keep the Iranian enrichment of uranium at low enough levels that it was suitable for peaceful use of nuclear energy, but not rich enough to develop nuclear weapons, was regarded as the greatest success of Barack Obama. I celebrate it. It was a genuine success. Today, however, I believe Iran would be well advised to obtain nuclear weapons, because if Iran were, like Israel, a nuclear-armed nation, then we'd usher in an era of mutually assured destruction where neither nation would be willing to threaten the other in the knowledge that it would lead to the consequence of their own destruction as well. I do believe, incidentally, that Iran has enough non-nuclear weapons to totally annihilate Israel, so that if Israel does undertake an attack on Iran, where they've been blowing and blustering about doing that for decades now, I do not believe they would be happy with the outcome. Meanwhile, what could happen next if the U.S. rejects the Russian ultimatum in relation to Ukraine? There's a lot of discussion about what Russia might do if the West ignores its ultimatum. All I propose to do here is share a few thoughts with you. Not a thorough analysis, but only some musings of mine about what I hear. This is from the Saker, whom I regard as one of the most brilliant geopolitical analysts the world knows today. First, Putin is very predictable and at the same time very unpredictable. The predictable thing about Putin is that he only uses force when there's no other option left. The unpredictable thing about Putin is how and where he's willing to use force. He did not intervene in the Donbass, which everyone expected, and he did not allow the LDNR to take even Mariupol, never mind the rest of Ukraine. But when he moved a special task force into Syria, nobody saw it coming. Ditto for the move to protect Crimea from a Ukrainian invasion. When assessing Putin's possible next steps, we need to keep in mind this paradox about him being both predictable and unpredictable. So moving nuclear forces to Kaliningrad or Belarus is not the only option for Russia. Second, there is no way Russia will simply start a war, not against Ukraine, not against the EU or NATO, and not against the USA. Only an ignorant fool would deliberately trigger a situation that might result in a planetary nuclear holocaust. But Russia has plenty of other options. Third, while in the 60s, the USSR needed Cuba to deploy her missiles to force the US to remove its missiles from Turkey, which we did in agreements that were not made public at the time, Russia has no such need today. Russian standoff weapons, both nuclear and conventional, can reach the U.S. from pretty much anywhere, including from Russia. Creating bases in Cuba, Venezuela, or Nicaragua are not, in my opinion, the sacred writing, feasible or even desirable. I rather see that money pumped into the Russian military. Fourth, all USN carrier, that's United States Navy, carriers and other ships now have hypersonic crosshairs painted on them, and they know it. This is from the Russian anti-ship missiles, which are the best in the world and are unstoppable. This will dramatically affect what the U.S. Navy can be ordered to do or where to deploy. Some observers have accused Russia of holding Ukraine as a hostage. This is silly nonsense, but yes, the Russians are, for all practical purposes, holding the entire United States Navy hostage, from small patrol boats to entire carrier battle groups. The only but important exception to this domination are nuclear attack submarines, where Russia has qualitative parity or even superiority, but where the U.S. has a strong quantitative advantage. In other words, the Russian subs and their weapons are better than American subs, but we have more of them, even though they are inferior. The U.S. Navy, nuclear submarines do not have modern missiles. They cannot win a war by themselves. They also have their hands full with China. Fifth, we know by the size of the Russian ground force currently deployed several hundred miles away from the Russian-Ukrainian border that this is a defensive force whose task would be to stop a Ukrainian ground attack on the LDNR. Yuki forces more or less of similar size are deployed a few tens of kilometers from the same border. So don't expect Russian tanks in downtown Kiev anytime soon. Besides, why should Russia interfere in any way if both the Ukraine and the EU are proactively committing cultural, economic, political, social, and even spiritual suicide? 6, we should not only focus on the European theater of military operations. Let's remember that China and Russia are now officially more than allies, and that Russia can sell exactly the same type of military hardware to China, which would be truly horrific for the USA. There are anti-submarine torpedoes or anti-missile missiles, like their anti-ship missiles, are the best in the world. Mark my words. Likewise, Russia can easily target U.S. forces anywhere in the Pacific covertly and overtly. 7. Then there is the Middle East. Just imagine what Russia could deliver quickly, say, to Iran, while providing verbal but meaningful guarantees to Israel that Russia would not allow Iran to use those systems against Israel unless, of course, Israel attacks first. Note, there's not much love between Russia and Israel, but at least both sides are intelligent enough to understand each other, so that helps a lot when needed. 8, Russia has a huge advantage over the U.S. and NATO in electronic warfare, from the tactical to the strategic, and she can easily use it to devastating effect while NATO has nothing to retaliate in kind. This, by the way, also applies to the Middle East, where apparently Russia has the means to disrupt or spoof GPS signals over the entire region. 9, we should not assume that Russia can only retaliate proactively. That would be a mistake. For example, Russia can do to Germany what the Kremlin did to the Ukraine: stop taking their calls and allow NS2, that's a Nord Stream pipeline, to be fully stopped. Why? Because while this will only marginally affect Russia, gas prices are already sky high, and China was a lot of it, while being a death sentence to the German economy, especially exports. So allowing the Nord Stream 2 to be indefinitely, actually temporarily suspended would be the best and possibly even the only way to bring the currently delirious Germans back to reality. 10, Russia could stop selling energy to the USA. Yes, the US is importing plenty of Russian energy, and if the Russians decide to stop it, the already pre-apocalyptic state of the US economy will suffer even more. And it's not likely the U.S. can turn to Venezuela or Iran for energy, since we've made them our enemy. As for Biden, he's already had to release a part of the U.S. reserves. 11, Russia could close her airspace to all NATO countries. I'm talking about civilian air traffic here. Russia has the most expensive airspace on the planet. If she shuts it down to Western carriers, the resulting chaos in the air and on the ground will be total. As for the costs of flying around Russia, they would be astonishingly huge. 12, we all know that Russia has a huge advantage over every other country in air defenses. Combined with her advantage in electronic warfare and automated battle management systems, that means Russia can deploy an electronic cupola not only over the Baltic or Black Sea, but over the entirety of Ukraine and major areas of the Middle East. U.S. and NATO call that anti-access area denial, and they're quite freaked out about it. 13, then there's the obvious move. Recognize the LDNR as sovereign states. There's strong support for both such move in LDNR and in Russia. That's the regions in the eastern part of Ukraine that are pro-Russia. The Kremlin could do that without moving a single soldier or firing a single shot, and then watch what the crow-Nazis in Kiev would do about it. My guess is the crow-Nazis would not do much about it, but if they do, the Russians will simply declare a no-fly zone over the LDNR and warn that any attack on LDNR will result in the destruction of the attacking forces. If the Yukis persist, the attacking forces will be vaporized, while the rest of the Nuki military will lose its cohesiveness and break apart under the combined effort of Russian strikes and the anti-access area denial capability. Putin recently spoke of not yet recognized, and he spoke of genocide. Now that we know that a submarine launch caliber missile has a range of over 1,000 kilometers, let's look at how a Russian sub can reach the entire Yuki coast from the very center of the Black Sea. Odessa would be less than 500 kilometers from the sub. And remember, the Yukis have no ASW capabilities at all, and Soviet-era air defenses only, and those are in terrible shape anyway. For your information, the Black Sea Fleet has 6 to 7 SSKs, while the Russian coastal defense cover the entire Black Sea, 14. It is rarely, if ever, reported in the West that Ukraine has conducted terrorist attacks on both the LNR and even Russia proper. So far, Russia has never retaliated in kind. But remember what happened when the attackers blew up several buildings in Russia? If not, what happened is the Second Chechenian War and total obliteration of attackers in Chechnya, which all Western analysts said was an impossible task to begin with. So far, the FSB has successfully foiled all of the Ukrainian attacks. But if one succeeds, then it's over for the Kiev regime. 15. Ukraine is currently building naval bases for NATO in several locations, including one in the Sea of Azov. That is the plan of the two geniuses Johnson and Z came up with. This plan is supposed to create a Ukrainian Navy within 2 years. Can you imagine how easy it would be for Johnson, for Russia to let Johnson Zelensky play Lego for a little while and then simply disable the future bases? I'm quite sure there are many more options I have not even considered above. The power of the Russian ultimatum is precisely in the fact that Russians have promised to do something military and or military technical, but have not spelled out what that something might be. I'll bet you in reality we're not dealing with one single something, but a succession of gradual steps that'll bring more and more pressure to bear on the U.S. and NATO EU, not that the latter matters in the least. Keep in mind that while the U.S. can make counterproposals, they're in no position to make any credible threats, hence the fundamental asymmetry between the two sides. Russia can make credible threats while the U.S. can produce only more words, something the Russians have basically stopped paying attention to. Back with my special guest right after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting "This is a drill, this is a drill" on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
In case anyone is wondering why I'm spending this much time on the Saker's critique of what's going on between Ukraine and Russia, bear in mind, Biden's poll numbers are in the toilet. He, at best, has 36% approval. Kamala Harris even lower at 28 or below. They're in desperate need of finding some way to garner public support. Historically, wars have had that effect. W's polls were bottoming out when 9/11 occurred, and because the country rallied to support the attack by alleged foreigners, which we know was all orchestrated, and where the CIA, the neocons, most of whom were dual U.S. Israeli citizens, and the Mossad were involved in pulling it off, where it originated in the fertile imagination of Ehud Olmert and Bibi Netanyahu in the late 1980s to find a way to draw U.S. forces into the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran, which was brought to an abrupt halt by the intervention of Russian and Iranian troops at the request of the democratically elected president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad. Biden would like to believe that a war would help and rally the American people to his side. After the fiasco of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, however, I believe the consensus is Biden is completely incompetent, and were there to be another war, even between Russia, EU, NATO in Ukraine, the public would hold it against Biden as simply a further demonstration of his incompetence. The Saker gives a summary of the situation here, which I shall complete before returning to my guest. From now on, the game is simple. Russia will gradually turn up the pain dial and see how the empire will cope with it. China will be doing the same as Russia. And China, and as Russian and Chinese actions are obviously carefully coordinated. My feeling is that Uncle Shamil will let the Europeans squeal in pain and only provide them with firm moral support for our friends, partners, and allies, while only caring about one thing, himself. As soon as the pain starts seriously biting the U.S., the latter will be forced to negotiate with both Russia and China, at which point Russia and China would have won. How soon will Russia turn up the pain dial? My guess is that the first steps will be taken soon unless the U.S. side shows some tangible signs of being willing not only to meaningfully negotiate, but to do so quickly. Putin has just repeated today, no delaying tactics will be acceptable to Russia. So far, it appears the U.S. will make a counteroffer to Moscow. If it's the usual bullcrap about the U.S. exclusivity, the pain dial will be turned up very soon in the next couple of weeks. If the Biden admin actually is serious and shows tangible, verifiable signs Washington will negotiate, then Russia could wait a little longer. We are talking a month, maybe a bit more, but nobody in Russia is talking about years or even many months. The clock is now ticking, and the U.S. must act with great speed before March for sure. I will end on a semi-optimistic note. Biden has already surprised me at least twice, and maybe he, in quotes, since we don't know who this really is, will do it again. Quite a few Russian analysts seem to think that Sullivan is a voice of sanity in the U.S. administration. We also know that General Milley was not willing to risk a Chinese preemptive attack, which would be a fart in a hurricane compared to what the Russians could unleash against the U.S. if they decided to preempt a U.S. attack on Russia. Maybe there are even more such sane voices in the U.S. deep or otherwise. Maybe the U.S. will do what Russia did and try to appear to retreat just to win time. Even that would be preferable to a full-scale war. Besides, the Russians are well aware of a possible delaying strategy, hence they made their ultimatum plague to a specific deadline. Show us something tangible, not just platitudes, or else we will take unilateral action. Any sane U.S. president would not try to call Putin's bluff. Let's hope and pray Biden has enough sanity to understand that. The U.S. has just announced an official reply will be presented to Moscow Friday last. I remain very, very dubious, but hope dies last, I suppose. Andre, who is the Saker. Meanwhile, today, Putin spoke with Schultz and Macron. Yesterday with Johnson, Putin has declared he's fed up with the West. And when international law and the UN Charter interfere with them, they will declare all this obsolete and unnecessary. And when something corresponds to their interests, they immediately refer to the norms of international law, the UN Charter, and international humanitarian rules. I, Putin said, am fed up with such manipulations. Finally, just to give you an idea of the mood in Russia today, 60 Minutes talk show on Russian TV, not one but two generals, who are both also heroes of Russia, including General Shaminov, the man who destroyed the takers in Chechnya and who declared that Russia will rip into shreds any imaginable enemy. Does anyone think that Shaminov is bluffing? I sure hope not. I think that's a really masterful survey of the situation abroad, where I believe Biden would like nothing more for a war, but it would have ill-fated consequences. Please, Adam, give us your thoughts about any of the above before we turn to other issues that are more directly related to Wisconsin and your campaign for the nomination for governor.
Well, for the first time in U.S. history, we have a so-called president, that has dementia, in my opinion. I'm not a medical scientist, but there's only 30% of Americans that believe that Biden is even president. I believe that we need to step up and we need to get ourselves a U.S. president that has the fortitude and the smarts to negotiate with other countries and to bring back peace and our economics. I mean, any idiot can look at this and say, you know, somebody's pulling Biden's strings. You know, let's go Brandon is all over the place. You know, Biden's wife should be pulling him off the podium so that he's not an embarrassment. I feel actually sorry for Biden. But we need a leader to stand up and take back our great country.
Adam, I think those are very astute and appropriate observations. Now, of course, in addition to Kyle Rittenhouse and Kenosha, we've had the bizarre events in Waukesha where a BLM supporter, a black man with a long rap sheet, who is out on bail for offenses including running over the mother of his child, perhaps not the only, with his car, $1,000 bail because the local prosecutor believes that bail is racist. He no doubt was elected with support from George Soros, who's dedicated himself to destroying America and has asserted that that is what he wants to see happen in his lifetime. So he's spending, you know, vast sums of money across the nation to get prosecutors who will not prosecute, who are going to turn criminals out the door. It's a revolving door. And it's having catastrophic effects ever since a defund the police movement took hold, which may be the most irresponsible platform ever endorsed by a major party in America. It's had the effect of actually leading to reduce spending for police. And it's well known that the fewer police, the greater the crime. And when you have that supplemented by prosecutors, district attorneys who won't prosecute, you got criminals going on a rampage where they're now doing shoplifting and looting, robbery, really wholesale out in California. We have a caravan of vehicles pulling up in front of expensive department stores like Nordstrom and just going hog wild, crashing all the jewelry displays, stealing, looting massively. The Democrats have brought this about. And even though cities like Minneapolis are now reversing themselves, my fear, Adam, is it's too little, too late. Civilized society is held together by the belief that those that commit crimes will be prosecuted. And once you remove that belief, the criminals are going to recognize they can act with impunity and do what they do, which is commit crimes, which is why they're criminals. As though the Democrats were so dumb, dumb as rocks, they couldn't see this coming. Frankly, I have never been more disgusted with a political party. And Adam, I say that as a guy who's always regarded himself as a JFK FDR Democrat. I believe in the Social Security networks, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation. Most of the time, I voted Democratic historically, even twice for Bill Clinton and twice for Barack Obama. It had a lot to do with the quality of the candidates they were pitted against, whom I judged to be grossly inferior. But when it came to Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, I knew enough of Hillary's corrupt career. She's one of the true monsters on the American political stage. I could never have voted for her. I believe what we needed in Washington was an outsider, someone with a new broom would sweep clean. I believe that was the advantage of Trump, but also the disadvantage because he didn't represent a party. They didn't have an administration in waiting. So Trump had to pick and choose and was given often, in my opinion, bad advice. But where Michael Flynn was a great choice to be his national security advisor. Just to give one illustration, in 2012, when John Brennan, then the director of the CIA, Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, and Barack Obama president, resolved to create a terrorist army in Syria to be known as ISIS, to rape and pillage and loot and murder, Mike Flynn spoke up against it. He was at the time the director of the National Defense Institute. And because he opposed their plan, which was monstrous in and of itself, Brennan suggested to Obama he ought to fire Flynn, which Barack Obama obligingly did. they couldn't stand to have Mike Flynn advising Donald Trump, because Flynn would have cut through all the smoke and mirrors and let Trump know exactly what was going on, because Flynn knew where the bodies were buried. So they had to contrive completely phony claims against him to get him out. And then, of course, they have repeatedly brought completely contrived and phony claims against Trump to initiate a first impeachment, then a second impeachment. And they're ongoing with the January 6th investigation, where it's very obvious now, and investigative reports from Revolver have confirmed it, that the FBI was playing a key role, that the principal instigators were agents provocateur from the FBI that were dispersed in the crowd, egging everyone on to commit acts they otherwise almost certainly would not have committed, and where even as high a source as the Attorney General Merrick Garland has declined to answer the question to which he was put in the House of Representatives of whether the FBI had agents involved in the January 6th insurrection, it's called, but it clearly was not an effort to overthrow the government. Your thoughts about any and all of the above, Adam?
So, Jim, and to the people out there, I am the Christian candidate that's running. I may lean a little bit more to the right, but I am the Christian candidate for all people. I am the law enforcement candidate. I can tell you, on day one in office, the handcuffs are coming off the police and military. We will take back and make Wisconsin a safe place to live. Criminals will be given one warning. After that, they'll have an option of due process. If they give up that option and they resist, or they come after law enforcement or innocent business owners or innocent people, we will use force. I will deploy the National Guard. I will use all the resources at my disposal to send a message that criminals will not be tolerated here in Wisconsin. And any district attorney or judges that do not want to uphold the law should resign, because they were taking an oath to uphold the laws. And in my opinion, if they are not upholding the laws, they're criminals themselves.
Oh, Adam, I think that's 100% correct. But, you know, how can we possibly regain control of our country? It seems to me the Democrats have unleashed the forces of evil, criminality all across the country. They're turning out criminals who have long been incarcerated on specious grounds so they can participate in more riots and looting and criminality. In other words, I think they've let the genie out of the bottle, the toothpaste out of the tube. I don't see any way to restore law and order over the short run, and even over the long, it's going to be exceedingly difficult. Your thoughts?
Jim, let me remind you of something. My bodyguard, the Lord Jesus Christ, was struck in the heel by the devil, by the Kraken. Okay? But at the end of the day, my bodyguard, the Lord Jesus Christ, crushed his head. So what I'm trying to say is, if us good Christian patriotic Americans all stand up and stand together and say enough, we are the shining lights. You cannot turn out the shining light. And with good leaders that aren't afraid, because I'm going to tell you, Fisher for governor is not afraid. I can't be bought. I can't be bullied. I'm a landlord, a business owner for over 20 years, and a former police officer of 6 years. I've been on the front lines, okay? I am not afraid. I will not be bullied. I will build a team of people that are not afraid. I will start with Wisconsin here, but I have a higher goal. In 2028, I'd like to run for president. But first, I want to clean up my own backyard where I grew up in, which is here in Wisconsin. My whole heart is here. I'm a fisherman. I'm a hunter. I'm a worker. I am a servant to the people, and I have been in the past, and I am now. So listen to me, people out there. Vote Fisher for governor. I will lead us back to the times that we remember, where good people could go to work, there were jobs for everybody, and we will not live in fear.
Well, I sure like what you have to say, Adam, even though I myself am not a religious, person. I am an agnostic who neither believes in the existence of God nor believes in the non-existence of God. It's an issue that, for me, lies beyond the scope of scientific and rational investigation, which, of course, is why it's an article of faith. All rabbis and priests and ministers would agree that belief in God and in Jesus Christ as his son is an article of faith that may be believed in the absence of evidence, which is why it's an article of faith. I respect everyone who has religious beliefs. They're simply not beliefs of mine. I also believe that we can do good acts, the right thing, for reasons that may or may not be similar. I believe your declared policies are certainly the right policies, and I endorse them without respect to what may be the totality of beliefs that move you in that direction. Certainly, the whole idea of defunding the police was an absurdity. Would you not agree?
I would 100% agree. We cannot have a lawless society and have it flourish. We need to give our resources to our heroes, our patriots, our law enforcement, our firefighters, our healthcare workers, our pastors, our teachers. We need to come together and unify. Wisconsin has always been through tough seasons. It's kind of like riding a bike. If you don't skin your knee, you'll never learn how to ride a bike. I can tell you, based on the experiences that I've had with being a police officer and a business owner and being in corporate America for over 20 years, I've skinned my knees a few times, but I know how to ride a bike. I know how to ride a four-wheeler. I know how to bring law and order back to Wisconsin. I know how to bring back our economy. I know how to stop wasteful spending. I know how to lower the tax rate for good, hard-working Americans, and I know how to get people back to work.
Let me add that because Mitchell is not here and I'm operating directly with a server, I'm very concerned about taking phone calls that might knock me off the air. So what I propose is, if you have a question or comment about any of the stories we covered or for Adam Fisher as a candidate for the GOP nomination, send them to me by email. Just put on the subject line, question in caps, question in taps. Send it to jim@moonrockbooks.com, jim@moonrockbooks.com. It'll reach me. I'll share it with Adam. We'll discuss it on the air. I would, of course, prefer to have you live, but as I observe, we're all too likely to be knocked off the air if I go about doing that in the absence of Mitchell. So please, if you can accommodate, knowing in advance that I'll be taking any questions you send and report any comments by email to me at jim@moonrockbooks.com. jim@moonrockbooks.com. Just put in the subject line, question in capitals. Send it to me. Send it to me now. We're going to be heading for the break here in just a few minutes. So you'll have the opportunity to do that, and I'll get as many on the air as I receive. So please take that measure. Adam, I'm simply delighted to have you here. Tell us about the timeline with regard to your candidacy, when the vote would take place. Is there going to be a Republican convention right here in the state of Wisconsin, all of the above?
So campaigning has been started. My campaigning started for me August 6th when I declared my candidacy. I didn't realize how much legwork that there was in getting things up and running. So I really didn't hit the streets until October 1st. But I can tell you that my calendar is filling up very rapidly. I've done at least 16 events now live. My first live speech was in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, in front of hundreds of people. And that was very eye-opening for me, but also refreshing at the same time. Because when I got up there and I let people know where my heart is, which I say this at every one of my speeches, and I really believe it, I wish that every candidate or public figures could be hooked up to an MRI machine to show their true intentions, to the people of why they're running and why they're here, I wish that we could do that, because I can't tell you myself, I am running as a servant to the people. I really believe that when I am elected, I can make changes in Wisconsin that people are going to take a breath of fresh air and say, you know what? This is what Wisconsin's about. And me being here, I'm 44 years old. I've grown up in Wisconsin. I've lived in Wisconsin my whole entire life. I love Wisconsin. But yeah, my calendar is filling up here going forward. I will be posting events on my website. I'm going to just throw it out here for the viewers. www.fisherforgovernor2022.com. You can see my entire bio. I grew up in the Milwaukee area in an 800-square-foot house. My first job was at George Webb on 92nd, Oklahoma, when I was 11 years old as a Hey You boy. I did a newspaper route. I cut a dozen lawns every Saturday. Just trying to give the viewers a little background. I've never been a politician. I've just been like everybody else, a hardworking American. And nowadays, one pissed off American. So I will be out there on the road fighting for all the Wisconsinites. You can also email me with any concerns in your cities or your walk in life, because I don't walk your shoes. I won't understand your issues unless you bring them to me. I understand the broad stroke issues, and they are absolutely on my radar. We will bring back law enforcement. We will bring back the economy. We will have jobs. We will fix the schools curriculum with the help of parents. Parents are the most invested in their children. Not the teachers, not the school boards, not the unions. They have a place, but the parents' voices must be heard.
That's all excellent. I want to return to some of those issues, especially critical race theory. We do already have a question here. Stand by. I'll bring it up. After the break, let me reiterate. Send questions to us by jim@moonrockbooks.com. Just put the word question in caps in the subject line, as the first to reach me has done. Give me your question. We'll get it on the air. We'll be right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, before we turn to other issues, including critical race theory, we do have a question that has been sent in from Francis or Frank. And while this may not be a part of your gubernatorial campaign, he would like to know your stance as to who committed the atrocities of 9/11. Adam.
I'm going to answer that with, I don't really know. I think that people have all kinds of different views on who did that. I know that, I'll make this statement, that it was a very sad day for all the people that were killed there, all the heroes that put themselves at risk. So whoever, and I know you don't believe in my God, but my God says that he will judge those that did that on 9/11. So all I ask is for the viewers to continue to pray for those people.
Well, I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005 and brought together hundreds of experts from all around the world to join in collaborative research. You can find the vestiges of the website at 911scholars.org, including several presentations, including one, an overview dedicated to Robert David Steele as to what happened on 9/11, that's a distillation of the collaborative research that substantiates that it was an orchestrated event brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad, as I've already mentioned before, but where I document the evidence in copious detail in order to draw American forces into the Middle East so that Israel could use them to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region and eventually to confront their arch enemy, Iran, which I believe has that status because Iran is the most powerful nation still standing that can inhibit Israel from doing whatever they want in the Middle East. So let us turn to the other issues that are going to be burning questions, I think, among potential constituents right here in Wisconsin. It's pretty obvious that Terry McAuliffe in Virginia went down to defeat because he only had two slogans. Really, he was talking about Trump, that, you know, kept attacking Trump, even though Trump wasn't on the ballot there. Trump wasn't his opponent, but this fellow named Youngkin, he kept talking about Trump. And he was, of course, attacking parents, which was a catastrophic mistake when the parents were concerned about critical race theory, which develops the view that America is a racist nation, that there are really, you have to divide the nation into the oppressors and the oppressed, that the oppressors are the white folks and the oppressed all the rest, including, interestingly, the Jews, where Kyle in Kenosha actually shot three whites, but technically they were all three Jewish. It's fascinating, the whole story there, where we wonder how much manipulation was taking place. In fact, Gross Grant's cell phone, although they had a warrant to download it, was never done. It was he that Kyle shot in the arm, who told a friend in the hospital as he was recovering that his only regret was he hadn't unloaded his weapon. He had a handgun, probably a 9mm, into Kyle as he lay there on the ground. But where I'm suspicious at the failure to download the content of his cell phone would have revealed that he was tied in with the others who were attacking Kyle and that this was an orchestrated attack. That's very peculiar. Let me ask you this very specific question then. Adam, if you were governor, would you initiate a further investigation into Kenosha, such as issues that I've just raised here, to find out what was really going on? Because I'm very troubled. A detective with the Kenosha Police Force said this was the first time he'd ever seen a warrant being issued and then not executed. Would that be on your agenda? And what's your take about critical race here? I mean, McAuliffe went down in flames. The Republicans elected not only a white governor, but a black woman lieutenant governor and an Hispanic attorney general. You would have thought the Democrats were celebrating the diversity, but apparently diversity only counts if it's on the Democrat or libtard side of the aisle. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to touch on the critical race theory first. I think the government is going to be rudely awakened by the fact that people are getting smarter and we're not going to be dumbed down. People want equality. We don't want segregation. So if you want equality, we're going to get rid of hate. We're going to get rid of CRT, SLM, whatever initials that you want to call them. We're going to get rid of that. I mean, white, black, Hispanic, Chinese, Asian, Indians, I don't care what you are. We're all human beings. We're all children of God. And I think we're all smart enough, and we're sick of being used as puppets by the government to fight with each other and live in fear. And that's the whole agenda of our current government right now, is for us to live in fear, whether it's pushing two different colors to go to war with each other, or whether it's the virus, or whether it's your mask and I'm not mask. The government is trying to make us live in fear so that they can make us a communist and socialist country. It has nothing to do with the issues. It has to do with the agenda of the current government that's going to dumb us down, make us fight with each other, kill our economy, kill our way of life, and fill us all with hate. So I'm asking everybody out there to wake up. Love your neighbor. We don't hate each other. Don't let them teach hate in school. To me, if a teacher is going to teach hate, they shouldn't be in the classroom. They should teach love. And to get to your other question about people that need to be held accountable, like in Kenosha, I am going to hold them accountable. There is no statute of limitations on doing the right thing. I will investigate. I will use resources, because unless we clean up the trash off our roads, the trash is going to always be there.
Well, I think those are good answers, and they're going to get a real positive response from the citizens of Wisconsin, Adam. I'd like to give you the opportunity to lay out what you take to be the major defects of the present administration, since I presume Tony Evers would be your opponent. I think he's a spineless weakling. I have no respect for Tony Evers. But I'm very keen to have your critique, your thoughts about the present Democrat administration right here in Wisconsin.
You know, I've never been a mudslinger, and I'm not going to start now. All I can tell you is that the differences with me as governor is I am a strong leader, okay? I like I said, I was a police officer. That's a tough job. I've been a business owner for over 20 years. That's also a tough job. We are in a broken state because, unfortunately, and this is not mudslinging, but this is a fact, we don't have a governor right now that's doing his job. I believe that if he would have stood up and did his job, Kenosha would have never got burned down. he should have let law enforcement handle the business. And if he would have sent the message that we weren't going to put up with terrorists burning down our cities, not one business would have been burned down. We would have never had the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And two people would still be alive today. Maybe not great people based on their backgrounds, but they would have still had the choice to maybe turn their lives around, become better citizens. And they weren't given that chance because the governor didn't do his job and deploy the National Guard. You know, I think he listened to some of my speeches his last time because he did deploy the National Guard and you saw what happened. We did not have any riots.
Those are great points, Adam. Meanwhile, I'm just receiving notice Washington, D.C. to introduce vaccine passports in January, the next city to further curtail civil rights. Starting January 15th, residents of Washington, D.C. age 12 and above will be required to show a vaccine passport to enter many businesses, including restaurants, Mayor Muriel Bowser said on Wednesday. On Monday, the mayor announced new restrictions focused on curbing the spike in cases that have made D.C.'s new daily rates higher than anywhere else in the country. The mayor initially responded to the spike in cases by introducing the indoor mask mandate, a vaccine mandate for government employees, and at-home rapid antigen tests. Now, Mayor Bowser announced a vaccine passport mandate that will be enforced by thousands of businesses. The move saw D.C. join a growing list of cities implementing strict restrictions for the unvaccinated, including New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, and Boston. And I got to say, having done a huge amount of research, all these measures are counterproductive. All these measures are destructive of the economy. All these measures are only going to make matters worse. And where Tony the Rat Fauci and his allies have been doing everything they can to suppress those medical experts in toxicology, immunology, virology who want to speak the truth and refute all the efforts that have been made. For example, a study done of the Spanish flu, in which Fauci himself was a participant, established the vast majority of deaths were not brought about by the flu, but by bacterial pneumonia infections, which it turns out are promoted by wearing masks. The masks are far too coarse to actually filter out a virus. The virus is tiny compared to the filters on the mask. Roughly think of it as a ping pong ball being filtered by a hula hoop. It's not going to work. Not only that, but it should be obvious to one and all that breathing oxygen-depleted air, recycling air, is not going to be good for your body, that it's going to kill brain cells, which, unlike skin cells, do not regenerate. So that's permanent, irreversible damage. It's going to put a strain on your cardiovascular system by not having sufficient oxygen. All the effects of wearing face masks are bad, especially when you consider they cannot do you any good. They cannot protect you from the virus. So what they are is a form of virtue signaling. In the beginning, even Fauci admitted masks won't work. On my blog, I may have as many as a dozen critiques of the use of masks, including a study from the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, which is our nation's largest and most prestigious medical scientific association, explain masks don't work. Even talking about in operating room settings, what they do is they inhibit spittle, you know, exhalation from affecting a patient. But they're not working to filter the air in a way that makes you safer. So all of that is complete nonsense. The vaccines, of course, which Sherry Tenpenny has described as perfectly designed killing machines, are going to kill us a whole lot faster. But from diverse sources, you have some who've taken the jab, even national, international athletes, soccer players who dropped dead on the field from the effects of having taken these mRNA vaccines, which actually change your DNA. And where it appears the general effect is to wipe out your immune system. so that instead of being able to resist other threats in the environment that you in the past would have been able to effortlessly shrug off, now you will be vulnerable. So when Biden talks about a dark winter coming, he's really not talking about the unvaccinated. He's talking about a staggering proportion of those who have already been vaccinated who are going to die from threats that they would never have been affected by but for taking the vaccine and thereby weakening their immune system. And third, it appears as though the supply problems, the supply chain problems are being deliberately manufactured, that farmers are being paid to plow under their crops, that they want to create a food shortage to tie it all off with mass starvation. And Adam, you may or may not be aware, but according to Deagle.com, which is a website with a lot of ties to the military-industrial complex, Deagle.com is projecting that the U.S. population will drop from 330 million in 2020 to only 65 million in 2025. That's a loss of 265 million Americans in just 5 years, which will include a lot of your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, your loved ones. Thus do I invariably now encourage everyone to spend as much time as they can with friends and loved ones, because we do not know how much time we have left. Would you, have governor, do anything you can, everything you can, to fight against the vaccine mandates in this effort to suppress us with masks, and do whatever possibly a governor can do to encourage production of food, making it accessible and defeating the supply chain problems? Governor DeSantis seems to me to be making giant strides, while the only ports that Wisconsin has are on the Great Lakes. We don't have any ocean-available ports. Nevertheless, it might be that there are things that Wisconsin can do. I invite your comments and response.
Absolutely. On day one, I will sign away the mandates. There will be no mandates for jabs. There will be no mask mandates. To all the business owners out there, I want you to ask, what have the mask mandates or the vax mandates done positively or negatively for your business or your neighbor's business next door? We're seeing a shortage in workers. We're seeing buildings and businesses closing doors. We see in our hospitals lack of resources and people. So what I'm saying to you is put everybody back to work. Stop fearing this government-created pandemic. It's a real virus, but they're weaponizing this thing to make you fear it so that you have to depend on a socialist communist country here in America, which I would have never thought I would have said those words in my lifetime, to be honest with you. You know, Americans, we fight for our freedoms. We believe in our freedoms. So I'm asking everybody to stand up against these vaccines, stand up against the mandates, stand up against the masks. I mean, I guess maybe a fair compromise is that we go to where we used to be with smoking. We have a vaccinated section and an unvaccinated section. Let people choose where they want to sit in a restaurant. You know, the same thing in the workplace. You want to be vaccinated? Great. You want to be unvaccinated? Great. But everybody's back to work, and you're not going to discriminate against our freedoms. Those are our constitutional rights. And on day one, I will be signing away these mandates.
Adam, I'm sure every resident of Wisconsin welcomes what you're saying, except, of course, that hardcore who are convinced that the vaccines are good for you. And it seems to me so much hinges on the false information we've been given about the vaccines, because if you believe the vaccines are good for you, then whether the pandemic is real or not, and I, like you, have suffered through what appears to have been an experience with Corona, where I was fighting for 2 weeks, at one point so weak I couldn't even drag myself out of bed, but where by virtue of ivermectin and one of these antibody doses, I recovered. And I am so grateful to a colleague who sent me the ivermectin to deal with the problem. But it's very clear these issues aren't going to go away. The coronavirus is forever, but that doesn't mean it represents a threat. It's been here forever already. Now, here's a new issue. Alan Dershowitz is commenting on the conviction of the police officer, the Minnesota police officer, Kim Potter, and the death of Daunte Wright, where she pulled her handgun instead of her taser and shot him for manslaughter. Now, the problem I've had with this case is that the taser and the handgun are on opposite sides of the body. The taser, unlike the handgun, has a big yellow component to it right on the barrel. I find it very difficult to imagine how she could have mistaken one for the other. Here's what Alan Dershowitz writes about it. The conviction of former Minneapolis police officer Kim Potter and the death of Daunte Wright was a double injustice and with dangerous implications for policing in America, especially considering the judge in the case denied her release on bail, Harvard Law professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz said in an opinion piece on Friday. Officer Potter, a decorated policewoman with more than two decades of service, simply did not commit a crime. Under American law, honest mistakes are not crimes, even if they result in tragic deaths. An elderly driver accidentally putting a foot on the gas instead of the brakes and killing a child, for example, is not necessarily a crime, Dershowitz argued. It becomes a crime only if the action was reckless, involving a conscious decision to engage in conduct the defendant knew posed a high risk of serious injury or death. Now, as a former police officer yourself, I have no doubt you're going to be addressed questions like this. So how do you sort out the Potter case, her being found guilty of manslaughter in both the first and second degree? It is a troubling case in every way. Your thoughts?
Well, I asked this question. What if it would have been a neurosurgeon who had a patient that died on the table? Okay. Should he be charged with murder, or was it, you know, an accident? So that's kind of how I look at this, and I try to put it in this perspective for other people to look at that may not be on the front lines. So in response, I think it was a tragedy, and I'm sorry for the family and family members that are out there, but I'm also sorry for the officer who has to live with this mistake. Because when you're in a high-risk situation, you know, as you're taught and as you're trained properly, you can go through all the training in the world. But when you're face to face with this disaster, which most people don't have to come face to face with, you're making decisions out there. And once in a great while, you may have a lapse in judgment and make an accident. You might do something wrong and you didn't mean to do it. And it was accidental. And that's what it was. It was an accident. She should not be charged with murder. She should not be charged with any crime. I don't see anything that she did was deliberate. There was no deliberate crime here. So she should not be charged. She can make an apology to the family, which I've seen that she's remorseful, which is good. And that the family should take her statement as, hey, she didn't deliberately try to kill my family member. She's hurting herself. She's a victim herself.
Adam, given this is Christmas Eve and we have only a few minutes remaining, I'd like you to have the opportunity to greet the citizens of Wisconsin, indeed of the world, with any final thoughts you have today on this occasion of our conversation.
To the people out there, I'm Adam Fisher. I'm not a politician, never been a politician. I am the Christian candidate. I'm a former police officer, a business owner of over 20 years. I am for freedom. I am against the mandates. I am for the parents having a choice in their kids' educations. I am for bringing back jobs for Wisconsin. I am for farmers. Without farmers, none of us live. Even though I do hear that we do have grocery stores, so why do we need farmers? Of course, that was a joke. We need farmers. We need resources for our heroes out there, for our police, our military, our teachers, our healthcare workers, and everybody else who is a servant to the public. Those are our patriots. And again, my website is www.fisher4governor2022.com. And yes, Governor Fisher will always say Merry Christmas.
Well, Adam, it's been a delight having you on today. I wish you well with your campaign. I think you'd be a huge improvement over the present governor, whom I regard as a spineless weakling who's doing nothing to benefit the state of Wisconsin or its citizens. I reiterate the threat of the vaccine. Here we have a report, brand new, athlete collapses, deaths following vaccination. A former CIA operative fact-checked the stories and found they were true. Why isn't the mainstream media doing these stories? I recently received an email from one of my followers on athlete collapses and deaths that were quite comprehensive. I've written extensively about this before. Note the number of deaths change as the vaccines are rolled out and athletes are forced to finally take them. See a difference in the number of reports per month? Here's the email. My company has been studying these kinds of cases in which young, fit athletes have cardio-related deaths or collapse, often right on the field. There have been many more of these incidents in 2021. I assigned one of our CIA-trained analysts to conduct a random sampling to confirm these events. Below are real. His response? I reviewed the list and specifically calculated research on some instances listed drawing on each month. All of the news stories I reviewed appeared authentic. I also found additional news stories on these cases reported by other outlets that further corroborated many of the stories. It's more detailed and goes into specifics about each of them, but let me simply use this occasion to reiterate. The vax is bad. It is true that the vast number of deaths are occurring from a tiny percentage of the batches. Many are going to have received the vax and not be harmed. But that also creates a false illusion that they're not doing damage when they're doing damage. So I wish you all the best for the Christmas. Spend as much time as you can with your friends and family because we do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here. Merry Christmas.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.